The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Thursday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined as always by my esteemed colleague, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, could a team having a senior moment be in the right place to cut down the NIT nets? The Liberty Bell is not the only thing cracked in Philadelphia. Is he the right side of their infield to start the season? And when we get to money time, the Staples Center might be 270 miles from our studios, but we think we may hear thunder clapping all the way back to Las Vegas.
Did you Google Maps that, Dave? Did you know it's 270 miles? Did you go door to door?
Yeah. I was guessing about 280, so I would have been off by about 10 miles, so I'm glad I got accurate with
it. I know you did. That's our Dave Malinsky. But first take on a Thursday. What do you have for us today?
We want to thank Jeff Van Gundy, because he coined a great phrase for us last night. Naturally, after we talked about Amari Stoudemire and what his absence or presence has meant for the Knicks, we wanted to watch Orlando and New York closely last. The Knicks looked real good because the Magic, of course, looked real bad. And one of the things they've done consistently this year, when they fall behind big, they give up. 11 double-figure losses, five of those losses by 20 points or more. Should never happen to a team at that good of a level. So what does Van Gundy do when he's watching his own brother's team implode one more time? Gives us a wonderful way of phrasing it, and we'll use it ourselves in the years ahead. The Magic, he said, give up the rope, or let go of the rope, when they fall way behind. We like that. And they did. They wave white flags. They give up. Now, the problem, of course, is in your database. It's hard to track that. You can't really take those five losses by 20 or more and measure them for the overall Magic abilities, because they are a better team than that. It's a character issue, though. When they do fall down big, they don't fight back. We're not quite sure where to go with that, or at least internally, adjusting our numbers as a big part of it. Were you up watching the Mariners and A's? I know you got a winner in your pocket. Did you get up and watch it?
No. I woke up and remembered about the
You didn't miss anything.
No. Well, you know, they got five runs as opposed to, three the first night?
Scoreless into the seventh.
Sure, sure. That's what we were looking for. We had a little bit of under in our pockets last night. But for today, first take, hey, it's official. Ding, 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 ding. March Madness. Bigger than the Super Bowl. The handle in Las Vegas approaching in the state of Nevada, approaching $100 million, which is bigger than the biggest Super Bowl handle ever. Now, some of that has to do with the fact that bettors won the first day, which means they came back with bigger bets as the weekend progressed. But the bottom line is that March Madness now supersedes the Super Bowl in terms of handle, and with Super Bowl handle up this year, and NCAA tournament handle up this year, it begs the question, handle worldwide up? Well, we've got a study that just came out from Australia that shows that sports betting, steady growth, 14.7% per year over the last 5 years, nearly 15% a year. And we have an Australian state official making it very clear what we've been talking about on this show from day one. Who are these sports bettors? Why is sports betting growing when other aspects of gambling not so much? Well, the gentleman tells us. Who are the bettors? They are younger men, professionals with disposable income. Exactly what advertisers are desperate to reach in the modern era. There's no stigma attached to sports betting. There's nothing degenerate about sports betting. It is a good way to have fun watching sports and make some scratch while you're doing it. And I'll tell you, It's what people want to do. The numbers clearly show it. Here in Vegas, here in the state of Nevada, in Australia, around the world. Hey, congrats, guys. You're one of us if you're watching this show today. Okay, let's move on to Market Watch. Talk about what's going on for the NIT opener, or opener, the NIT final tonight. We have Minnesota. They've taken money so far today. This game opened to pick 'em. Gophers now -1.5. You can still find minus ones if you're an avid line shopper. Prevailing number in Minnesota, -1.5. Total here, 131 and a hook. This, you know, feels like a pick 'em game in many regards. The power ratings are showing, obviously, that it's a pick 'em type contest. But, Dave, there may be a little edge here for the Stanford side, especially now they're catching points.
Traditionally, it might look that way. And that's why we've got to be careful breaking this one down, because this really does look like a pick 'em game. And one of the things we don't like is pick 'em games with young players. Half the starters tonight are going to be freshmen. That makes it a little bit difficult to step in. Now, here's the conundrum. Stanford does have 3 senior starters. Now, they made it to the preseason NIT finals, played well, lost a close game to Syracuse. They're back in the Garden again. There's a nice little bit of savvy there. You might think, wait a minute, if there are only 3 senior starters on the court and they're all on the same side, we might want to look there. But here's the problem. The 3 Stanford seniors aren't all that important in the grand scheme of their rotation. These are role players. Part of the reason why Stanford has not been that successful over the past couple years is that this was that core class that just wasn't that overly talented. There's that good, bad in college basketball. It's good when you have your seniors sticking around from an experience standpoint. It's bad sometimes when you have that many seniors starting, because that meant they weren't good enough to go to the NBA. So they had that little bit of veteran leadership. We just wish that those seniors were the guys who are going to take the most shots, distribute the most passes. That's why it's maybe not quite as good as it looks on paper.
Yeah, that being said, I mean, I really don't want the Gophers in this ballgame. If I'm playing, I'm going to take with Stanford. And I know that Minnesota's on this monster run. What are they covered now? 9 in a row. Obviously, success. The only games they've lost over the course of the last month come in overtime. They had the one in the at the end of the regular season. They had the one in the Big Ten tournament to Michigan. But at the same time, if you watch the two teams play 2 nights ago, and I watched both games pretty closely, you know, Washington stunk. Washington did not bring their A game, much as they talked the talk. I mean, maybe they brought it for the last 5 minutes of regulation when they rallied back against Minnesota. An 11-point deficit ends up going into OT, losing that by a single point. But Washington wasn't good. And Minnesota barely survived in advance. We saw a lot of difficulties closing out that game from the Gophers. Their offensive flow wasn't there, and it wasn't for the young point guard making a couple of incredible shots. They would have lost. Stanford, I mean, UMass came to play, and Stanford was just a better team. You know, the game tied with about 7 minutes left. Stanford pulled away. They made the plays down the stretch. And for as good as Minnesota has been during this run, hey, Stanford's played much, much better basketball over the second half of the season, really over the course of the last month, month and a half. You know, Cardinal head coach Johnny Dawkins, he could have called him on the hot seat a month ago. Didn't know if he was going to be back. He's going to be back now. You know, he has solidified his job. And I look at the Cardinal, they're no worse than Minnesota. You know, Pac-12 as a conference has had some pretty good success in these minor tournaments. And my lean here towards Stanford, I'm waiting to see if I see a +2. I have no bet in my pocket on that game just yet. But at +2, I will absolutely pull the trigger on the Cardinal. At 1.5, well, we'll see. I may well get there as well. But the bottom line, yeah, it does feel like a pick 'em game. But this is one instance where I'm looking to go against the sharp money telling me that I should be betting on Minnesota.
I'm going to actually agree with that. If at +2, that becomes your buy time with Stanford here. Minnesota did not play with poise down the stretch against Washington. The game they could have won more easily. No, you saw that inexperience. So, yeah, Stanford gets a little bit of an edge on the experience factor, the fact they've been in the Garden now for 4 games. But you know what? If you can take +2 on a coin flip, you're supposed to do that every time.
So, tomorrow's show, just to set it up, we have a big show announcement. You want to tune in tomorrow. We also have Final Four previews tomorrow. Going to break down the 2 games on Saturday that I know we'll all be watching, and most of us will be wagering on at least one of the two. And, of course, NL Central preview for tomorrow.
Pirates and Astros.
Exactly. I know you guys are dying for Pirates and Astros breakdown. Not to mention the Cubs. You'll get all of that on tomorrow's show. For today, hey, we got email questions. Keep them coming in. The address, of course, sportsday@covers.com. You can follow us on Twitter, at Vegas Sports Day. And you can make your voice heard in the discussion. Active threads going right now, covers.com/posting.
Coming up next, there might not be a more interesting division to break down anywhere in baseball than the NL East. We're going to be right on it. You're watching Vegas Sports.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Hey, I'm Al Mann. Is that how you get them to do that all the time? Just sit there and be an ass. Is that it? Hey, I'm Al. Hey, I'm Al Mancini at Top of the Food Chain. You are watching the Vegas Video Network. We got big forks, big spoons. I got a big mouth. I got no guests.
It's NL preview time here on Vegas Sports Day. And we're going to use the same format that we've been using. The graphic you're about to see is going to show last year's win totals and this year's odds to win the division. So let's pop that graphic up and run through the teams. The Philadelphia Phillies won 102 games, most in Major League Baseball last year. They're prohibitive favorites to win the NL East, minus 180, the current prevailing line. Atlanta Braves, yeah, the only reason that we're not talking about the Braves as being the most epic collapse in September baseball history is because, of course, the Red Sox were even worse. Atlanta at 89 wins. They were on pace to win 95, 98 for much of the season. Collapsed down the stretch. They're plus 550 to win this division in 2012. The Washington Nationals won 80 games a season ago. They're 8-1 dogs to win the division. Oh, look at those Mets. 77 wins a year ago. I still can't figure out how they did that. This year, 61-1 to win the NL East. Betting markets don't think they are going to do it, and I can't say I disagree. And the not the Florida Marlins anymore. New stadium, new name, the Miami Marlins. 72 wins a season ago. The betting markets expect a significant improvement this season. Can't say I blame them for that either. They're 5-1 dogs. They're actually the second choice among bettors to win the NL East in this upcoming campaign. So where are we going to start, Dave? You want to start with Philly or you want to start with some overview?
We got to start with Philly because it's such an interesting team to look at. Yeah, the top of that starting rotation, so dynamic. I mean, Cole Hamels on a given season could be a Cy Young candidate. So not only three all-star types, three guys who could be good enough for Cy Young. But, and this is a big but, that lineup has a lot of holes in it. Not only because of injuries early, but when they get guys back later. Look at how this infield. Polanco and Rollins, who are both pretty well past peak. And the right side of the infield, thinking Chase Utley, thinking Ryan Howard, not yet. And here's the key, we don't know when. Take this directly from Ruben Amaro, breaking down those injuries. We just don't know when these guys are going to be back. We have no idea when Howard's going to be healthy. We have no idea when Chase is going to be healthy. He feels he's making progress, but none of us, not our doctors, not me, not Chase, I don't think anybody knows exactly how much or how quickly he's going to progress to the point where he's doing baseball activity. Now, who do you have on that side of the infield? Starting at second base, Freddy Galvis, a career 246 hitter in the minor leagues. First base to open the year, Ty Wigginton, Jim Thome. That's not terribly good. But even when Utley and Howard come back, just how good are they going to be anyway? Neither of those guys were all that dynamic last year.
Yeah, I mean, the Phillies, again, 102 wins a season ago. That was best in the majors by 5 games over the Yanks, 6 games over the Brewers. Still, number 5 in baseball in profits. They weren't the most profitable or one of the most profitable. They were a notch or two down the line, and 3/4 of those profits came on the road. You did not make money or significant money betting on Philly at Citizens Bank Ballpark. They had 52 home wins, and yet only about plus three and a half units in those home wins, which tells you the high price you're going to pay to back any of these starters. And Dave nailed it. You know, when you talk about the top three starters, Halliday, Cliff Lee, Cole Hamels, they all finished in the top five in the Cy Young race a season ago. They're all candidates, but you're laying $1.80, $2, $2.20 to support them. Not easy to get to the window on a consistent basis. And when you win 52 home games and you're up three units, you know, that's not good. The one way you could have made money with Philadelphia last year, they did very well against southpaws. 30-14 against lefties, that was the best in the majors. You look at the bullpen for Philadelphia, and you know, remember when the Boston Red Sox signed John Lackey from L.A., and the Angels were like, okay, the Angels fan, you guys can have him. Well, here's Philadelphia with a new closer, Jonathan Papelbon, who was not particularly steady with the Red Sox last year, and has some concerns at the back end of that bullpen. You know, you like the veteran righty Jose Contreras in the bullpen. You like Antonio Bastardo as the power lefty, but you're not convinced that this bullpen's going to be dynamic. You know, this is not a scary lineup. Dave nailed it. Jimmy Rollins, been 5 years since his MVP. A lot of guys on the downside of their careers. Not so many guys on the way up.
So let's play a little strategy right off the bat with Philly. One of the sneaky ways to make money will be some run line bets, because Halliday, Lee, Hamels are going to be out there very prohibitively. But if we can grab some of these plus one and a halves against them, no, we're not going to bet anybody to hit Halliday or hit Lee. We're going to bet against the Phillies scoring enough runs to get easy wins. Let's go to another team that is not going to get a lot of easy wins this year, and we think there could be value to play against. When you look at what Atlanta did last year, so many things had to happen right. The offense wasn't special, and again, won't be. Chipper Jones, not healthy to start the season. We don't know how good Craig Hayward is actually going to be in reality. But let's look now at that bullpen. And they were so, so special last year. How good? Johnny Venters, Eric O'Flaherty, Craig Kimbrel combined for an ERA of under 2. Those three guys going to do that again? No, it's possible those three could have an earned run average a full run higher this year than last year, and that would still be a really good season for them. So to us, it looked like a max out. No Chipper Jones day one, no Tim Hudson day one, a lot of issues offensively in terms of punch. I don't know if Atlanta can get as high as they were last year, largely because a couple of teams we're about to talk about are much improved. So not only is Atlanta weaker, but those wins are going to have to come against tougher competition.
No question. And, you know, again, the Braves, they had an 8.5 game lead in the wild card race with 23 games remaining. An epic collapse. Absolutely epic. And sometimes it's hard for teams to get off the mat after that type of meltdown over the course of the most important month of that MLB season. And, you know, not much has changed with this Braves roster between last year and this year. You know, we saw general manager Frank Wren decide, hey, I'm going to hold the fort, stay the course with these guys. And again, there were certainly injuries down the stretch a season ago. Jared Jurgens got hurt. Tommy Hansen got hurt. Brian McCann got hurt. The bullpen got overused and overworked. And they're thinking, all right, you know, same core. We didn't hit particularly well last year. Jason Hayward is too talented to fail to break out forever. They're thinking they can hit a lot better this season than they did a year ago with basically the same lineup. That's a sense of optimism that I'm not sure I agree with 100% for Atlanta. But, you know, again, the Braves a season ago, they won 89 games compared to the Mets at 77. Atlanta, two units of profit. The Mets, you made more money betting the 77-win Mets than you did the 89-win Braves, which tells you, again, the high price some of these starting pitchers are going to have to pay. Dave talked about the bullpen, and I'm just going to bring it up real briefly here. Number one in the bullpen ERA, number one in bullpen strikeouts, number one in bullpen batting average against. Those are very difficult numbers to repeat 2 years in a row. Atlanta, 89 wins. I'm not going to disagree with you, Dave. They might have maxed out at that number.
I will always call Jason Hayward Craig because I missed Ironhead. He was one of my favorite college football players. One of the most fascinating teams to watch this year, the Washington Nationals, because when you talk about individual upside, you got Steven Strasburg. So many pitchers on the mound with potential. Yeah, Edwin Jackson and Gio Gonzalez, maybe not that high of a ceiling, but there's a lot of potential in that rotation. How much? John Lannon, who led the team in wins and earned run average last year, He's a number five guy in the rotation, and he only made the number five because Chien-Min Wang is hurt right now. So there's a lot of depth, a lot of upside. You may see Bryce Harper before the season's over. So how excited are we supposed to get about the Nationals? If you believe Jason Worth is going to hit better than he did last year, almost has to. You believe you're going to get a healthy infield, a third base, much different position than it was last year. There's a lot of upside here for a team that almost was 500 last year anyway. Are we getting too excited about the Nationals?
This is certainly a team to pay attention to. Washington has that potential. You don't know if they're going to be able to strike lightning. Washington has had high hopes before, but this year's roster seems to be much better built than those in years past. And again, you know, we're talking about a team that won 80 games a season ago. Philly won 102. The difference in profit between betting on Washington every game and betting on Philadelphia in every game? One unit. You know, that's the difference when you're not having to lay the high prices with the expensive starting pitchers. Now, I don't know if that would be the same this year because the betting markets do like this team early, and I don't blame them. Even with the Davey Johnson factor, he's not a manager that I trust. Johnson, someone who was ahead of his time in the 80s, don't know if he's ahead of his time at this stage of his managerial career. But, you know, there's a lot of playoff talk, a lot of optimism in Washington right now, in the locker room, in the media. And, again, from 80 wins, not that hard to project a significant improvement. You look at the lineup. You know, you got four guys who are legitimate sluggers on this team that could hit 20, 25 home runs with ease. And, you know, Worth, LaRoche, Morse, Zimmerman. You have a lot of pitchers coming off the injuries and some significant injuries. You know, we saw the guys like Gio Gonzalez and Edwin Jackson come in as good third, fourth, fifth type starters to fill out the rest of that rotation. But, you know, can Strasburg be the pitcher that they hope that he'll be? Will Zimmerman be the pitcher that he showed signs of before his Tommy John surgery? They've talked about Bryce Harper, who's been, you know, this dynamic prospect. He went back to AAA to learn how to play center field. He'll be in the majors before this season is done. All they need is a leadoff hitter, someone to get on base. Maybe this Washington team is going to be a little bit scary, but at the same time, issues in the back end of the bullpen. Drew Storen had a phenomenal year last season. Well, he's going to open up the new year on the DL. There is some depth. You know, they have Clippard, they have Brad Lidge, they got Rodriguez, a couple of guys who can fill in. But bullpen concerns have been there for Washington since they moved to Washington, and that may not be different in 2012.
First thing you've got to do with New York is change your ballpark ratings. And that means all these home and away stats for the players, especially for the pitchers. Big changes at Citi Field this year. Down the line in left, the wall has been moved in 13 feet. The power alley out in right center, that's been brought in 17 feet. How significant is that? Well, they've only been playing in this park for 3 years. The Mets' own analysis shows that there would have been 151 more home runs. Now think about that, over, you know, 243 games. That's a pretty significant upgrade. Just home runs, not overall scoring. Because remember that people look at home runs first. There are a lot of fly balls caught at the warning track that now hit the wall and become doubles. There are a lot of different dynamics in play. So one of the first things you want to do, take those 3 years' worth of Met home stats, throw it out. Different ballpark, it will impact the pitchers differently, especially for some of the pitchers that they have. Mike Pelfrey, guy pitching the contact, had really good home numbers, lousy on the road. He may be lousy, home and away both right now. But let's look at upside first. Johan Santana not only has looked healthy this spring, right now they're projecting him to start on opening day. That will be interesting to see whether Santana can be the Santana of old. Probably not, because shoulder injuries are difficult. Pitchers come back, tend to not come back well. But the big decision the Mets have to make with Santana, with a guy like David Wright, who of course will put up bigger numbers early with defenses being moved in, come trading deadline, and you're sitting in last place in the division, because you will be, are you hoping Santana and Wright get out of the gate well, not to win games, but to rebuild your team? Because right now, with this roster, you'd almost like to just wipe the slate clean, start all over again.
Yeah, and given their bankroll, may be an issue as well. You know, the Mets were just awful at Citi Field. You can't blame them for changing the stadium configuration. They had to do something because they're not drawing any fans. 34 wins at home last year, 19 units in the hole in just 81 games. Contrast that with what they did on the road, where they won 43 games and made 17.5 units of profit. I misspoke earlier. There was a unit's worth of difference between Atlanta and the Mets for the season. Atlanta was the better of the two teams when you look at the full year records. But considering that one team won 89 games, the other team, not so much. You know, 77 for the Mets, one unit of profit for a 12-win differential tells you that the Braves were a little bit overpriced, the Mets a little bit underpriced, particularly in that road dog role where they were so successful. And the Mets, even with Citi Field being an extremely pitcher-friendly ballpark, they were an over machine a season ago. 92 overs, that was the most in Major League Baseball, and you have to think that has the potential to continue, considering that they're moving the fences in this year. Now, so many things wrong with the Mets coming into the campaign, and again, they don't have any money. The GM, Sandy Alderson, talking, the fact is, we've lost quite a bit of money over the last couple of years. We have to create a more sustainable operation. Yeah, you do, because you know, they're giving $162 million, the Wilpons, the owners, to the victims in the Bernie Madoff scandal. That takes a little bit of a chunk out of what you might be paying for the product on the field. Number 28 in bullpen ERA a season ago. Number 28 in batting average against. It's a team that is fundamentally flawed in many areas. There may be some potential, because I don't think the betting markets are going to be excited about the Mets in any way, but it's very likely that this team is going to blow itself up and rebuild from the bottom, which means that New York is going to be just another bottom feeder over the back half of this Major League Baseball season.
Might be the most interesting team to talk about in all of baseball coming up next, the Miami Marlins. As Teddy said before, not the Florida Marlins anymore. And here's what you do with the Miami Marlins. Not only do you change that name, but all these home stats you got for Florida, throw it all away. Doesn't mean anything for these pitchers. A big change in ballpark. And it's a nice-looking new stadium. It's one that's going to have a dome so that they don't have as many rains out. But look at these dimensions. 344 down the line in left field. 422 straight away, what they're calling the Bermuda Triangle out there in center. 335 down the right field line. That's a big ballpark purely outdoors. In fact, John Buck, the catcher, refers to it this way. Size-wise, I think it's a lot like Coors Field. Obviously, the ball won't travel as well here because we don't have thin air. Well, you know what else you're going to have? A lot of air-conditioned air. When you take a ballpark that size, you close the roof, you're looking at a lot of 2-1, 3-2 games. Imagine series where the Phillies come in, and you're going ace on ace in a series. You see a lot of 2-1 baseball. So now the question will be, can Florida play that kind of baseball with Ozzie Guillen pulling the strings? We're not quite sure why they paid the price they did to get Guillen. They actually gave up a couple of prospects. And we're not sure you give up anything to get in unless they thought they needed that to get the Hispanic market to come to the games. Going to be a lot of chess matches out there this year. Let's see if he can make those chess matches work.
Yeah, I mean, we will throw out last year's Marlins numbers, but just to bring them up real quickly, bottom of the league, bottom quartile of the league in profits, they only had 32 home wins for the entire season, minus 22 units at home. Many of these off-season moves, and you look at the guys they were bringing in, they're in an effort to sell tickets because this team has not sold tickets at any point throughout the course of their tenure in Florida. They won two World Series. They blew up two World Series teams immediately after the World Series victories because they weren't making any money. It's been a franchise hampered by a lack of fan support. They need fan support in the worst way. So when you talk about the guys that the Marlins were bringing in, yeah, they need guys that are going to appeal to their fan base. 32 losses by one run last year. Couldn't get the clutch hit, couldn't get the key out. That was tied for second most in baseball, and only 49-67 against righties. They had much more profitable support against the Southpaws. Now, a couple of key guys coming off injuries. Josh Johnson, who looked like a superstar before he got hurt. Hanley Ramirez, who has been a superstar, but has suffered through injury problems. Both those guys have had good, productive springs. You talk about Ramirez and Reyes on the left side of that infield, two guys with a history of injury problems where Florida is really relying on those two to bring speed and pop to the front of that batting order. You look at, in terms of the moves that they made, and I don't know if there was a roster in baseball that made bigger moves, including the Angels. You know, the Angels got two key free agents, but this is a roster that's been remade. You look at that starting staff, it looks strong. The bullpen looks decent. Miami, it's definitely a wait-and-see approach for me with the Marlins, with one exception. Yeah, Dave, I'll be looking to bet this team under the total on a fairly consistent basis coming into the campaign.
Let's just hope it doesn't get away too quickly. And that's one of the things we'll be looking forward to seeing as they price it. If we go out there on opening day and we see a 7, when, okay, market's got it figured out. But watch this left side of the infield. If they're healthy, and this is going to be a little bit tricky for Florida totals, how many triples could Jose Reyes hit in a ballpark or an outfield that's this big? It could be very dynamic there. Hanley Ramirez could be the same way. A guy we also want to focus on early in the season, Mark Burley. We like these crafty type of left-handers. When it's the first look against an opponent, advantage to the crafty guy the first time through. So a couple of good ways to get involved with the Marlins early in the year. And yeah, we still like Heath Bell, especially in this kind of ballpark, to hold down a late lead. Yeah,
exactly. It's like he's pitching at Petco all over again. We saw a significant market adjustment last year in Major League Baseball. In previous years, totals, you know, you saw the occasional 6.5, but really most of the times you'd see 7s, with a minus 120 or a minus 125. Last year we saw the market move to 6.5 consistently, and even to 6 in a lot of these West Coast parks, and yet the 6.5s and 6s were still going under the total. So I wouldn't be shocked to see 7s in Miami. If the right number is 6.5, you make a lot of money betting under 7 in those type of situations.
Okay, you're going to have to wait till next week to get in play with the Marlins. But there's plenty happening in the NBA tonight. A dynamic doubleheader on TNT. We're going to break them down for you next as Money Time begins.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Okay, guys, it's money time.
Finally got it right. Yeah. 110 shows, finally got it right.
I thought it was 110?
Money Time.
Yeah.
Beautifully done.
Why, thank you, Dave. It gave your ears a little bit of a rest. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's start tonight in Miami, where we have an NBA Finals rematch, part two. We saw part one on Christmas Day, the NBA opener, and Miami, whoo, they laid a whipping on Dallas. In Dallas, the Mavericks looked old, the Mavericks looked out of shape, and Miami came in as a focused ball club, blew them out of the water. The final score in that contest did not accurately reflect how it was played. Heat led by as much as 30 in that ballgame. Tonight, Miami laying 8 at home to Dallas. And, you know, we turned in a losing ticket with Miami at Indiana earlier in the week. Instead of bouncing back off the loss, hey, the Heat got bounced, bottom line. Talking about a team that's now just 8-6 straight up since the All-Star break. So the focus becomes, is this one of those settings where a good team reaches back for something special, especially with Dallas coming to town for the first time since last year's finals? Remember how those finals ended with the Mavericks celebrating on Miami's home court, something they've talked about a fair bit in the media over the course of the last 24 hours. Or is there something wrong with Miami that's preventing this type of a turnaround? Something wrong in terms of the injury front, or perhaps in terms of how they're playing overall?
There is something wrong, and that's what we'll be watching closely tonight. It's one thing if you're not shooting well, or if the other team is making a lot of shots. Shooting can be a little bit random in short samples in the NBA. Right now, the Heat, they're not hitting the board. Now, we wondered if this might have been a problem at the start of the season, that you don't have a true number one or a number five. You can make up for that, of course, when you have Bosch, James, and Wade, because they're so good at the other positions. But the ones and the fives do a lot of things for you. The ones mean that you don't have to work as hard. You got a good point guard, they'll get the ball to you in scoring position. You don't have to work that hard yourselves. You got a number five, you get rebounds. So even though the thought is, you know what, these guys are still young, they're talented, they can handle the condensed schedule, maybe they can't. And where we see it the most is in rebounding. Let's take a look at just how far Miami has fallen off the table in terms of rebounding in this last cycle. First 40 games of this year, the Heat plus 135 rebounds. Good control of the boards. The last eight games, how about a minus 62, almost eight rebounds per game. They're losing the battle of the boards. The gap between the first 40 and the last eight, over 10 net rebounds per game. This team looks tired. When we played them against Indiana, we thought, okay, they're off a loss. They've played with pride off of a loss. They'll bounce back well. They wanted to. The energy level wasn't there. But now does that change tonight? You got a day off. Here comes Dallas. Here comes a little more adrenaline. Is that enough to get them to a peak tonight? Or is that rebounding issue going to come to the forefront one more time?
Well, I mean, the one thing we do know about Miami is that LeBron's dislocated finger, something he called the most painful injury that he's ever suffered, it looks okay. He practiced well in practice yesterday. But getting margins against this Dallas team, even when you're playing well, it isn't easy. Dallas 23-14 against the spread as road dogs over the last 2 years. The issue for tonight, they've been kind of like Orlando. When they give up, they're giving up and losing by margin. 6-4 over the last 10 games, but all four losses, they've waved the white flag by 13 points or more in those defeats. So Dallas had a hard time when other teams make a run, bouncing back from that run. And of course, it doesn't look like they're going to have Brendan Haywood again this evening. That means that the Miami weakness on the boards may not be as bad as it looked on that chart. Dallas is weak on the boards. Three times their last four games, they've lost the rebounding battle themselves by 14 rebounds or more.
Go to the TNT nightcap at the Staples Center. Oklahoma City now a one-point favorite over the Lakers. But what a circus it's been for Mike Brown in his first year. There were the adjustment problems before he ever got on the court. Kobe saying, you know, they should have asked me who the new coach should be. Now here come the Paul Gasol trade rumors. Now here comes the trade of Derek Fisher, the most stable player on that Laker roster. Now Kobe gets benched late in the game against Memphis because he wasn't playing well, and you get a little fallout from that. And then Andrew Bynum with that three-point shot fiasco, not only taking a horrible shot against Golden State, but not even realizing it afterwards. And when we saw the post-game comments from Bynum, we thought, what is this guy, like 14, 15 years old? He just doesn't get it. Yet here are the Lakers sitting with a home court advantage in the first round of the NBA playoffs. Of course, they could also fall completely out of the playoffs because it's so concentrated in the West. Still in a range where they'd be in a pick-em type game against Oklahoma City. I'm wondering if the Lakers belong here. The one thing Oklahoma City is doing very, very well, we're talking about these close encounters charts, when they get involved in a close game late, they win it. They D up pretty well. They've got the end game go-to scores. Oklahoma City 10-5 this year, both straight up and against the spread in what we call the close encounter scenarios. And we wonder tonight, if it's a close game late, if there might be even some more edges their way.
Well, there may be a guy named Derek Fisher we can talk about, but let's wait a moment before we get that. OKC, easy tune-up in Portland on Tuesday. No starter got to 35 minutes. We saw them obviously blow out Miami in a win against the Heat. They're playing at a very, very high level right now. So naturally, it's the TV showcase game, and here's Derek Fisher helping the Oklahoma City coaching staff put a game plan together for this one. Here's the quote from Thunder head coach Scott Brooks. He knows Kobe's game better than anybody. We definitely will talk to him, and we have already. And, of course, a key addition, he doesn't make any impact in the point spread, but I'll tell you what, he makes an impact on the floor. That's Sabo Cephalosha, who is a legitimate defensive stopper for Scotty Brooks and company. He's back and in rotation to guard Kobe Bryant tonight. They have plenty of size and depth inside to cope with the Bynum-Gasol combination for L.A. And, you know, Lakers, They've had problems matching up against OKC, no question about it. Since Perkins arrived in Oklahoma City last year at the trading deadline, well, L.A. had a 14-point loss and a 15-point loss in the two matchups, one at the Staples Center, one in OKC. Where's the matchup against Kevin Durant? Meta World Peace, he's a good defender. Don't know if he's got the quickness to stay in front of KD. And, of course, even with Ramon Sessions, not sure that anybody's staying in front of Russell Westbrook these days. He's been playing at an exceptional level. So what do you say, Dave? Should we use this for something?
Let's bet it.
You want to?
Let's play this.
All right.
Take it home.
I'm absolutely ready to take it home. Oklahoma City Thunder, yeah, -1. That will be the Vegas Sports Day play of the day for Thursday. Thunder minus a point in the nightcap on TNT this evening. Expect an OKC victory. And if OKC wins, worst you can do is push. Best you can do is hope they win by two or more. You can cash your ticket. Thunder -1, play of the day for Thursday.
Pirates and Astros tomorrow.
Pirates and Astros.
Big show.
Big show announcement. Final Four breakdown. Make sure you're here. For now, we're going to sign off. For Malinsky, I'm Sabransky. Enjoy the games. Good luck. We'll see you tomorrow.